to the Matthew Carroll Podcast. I'm the titular character, and this is Spencer Roeder. How's it going, Spencer Roeder?
Hey, man, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Man, I'm doing really well. Really, really well. Had a good week. I have been really getting into making videos for this album. we finished our second one this week for Pilots and Sailors. Those of you who are will actually be discussing Pilots and Sailors on the next podcast. But if you dig the album so far and you like Pilots and Sailors, please go watch the video. Because
isn't Heart on Fire next?
You're right. You're totally right. Heart on Fire is next, then Pilots and Sailors.
Yeah. See, this is a continuing trend. If this is your first episode, go back and listen to the other episodes, and you'll realize I know Matt's album better than he does.
He really does. For some reason, I can't ever remember the, like, 4, 5, and 6. Like, they always get confused. To be honest, after the first three, it gets fuzzy. So something we started last time, kind of on the fly, and I wanted to continue, and I actually gave you warning this time, Spencer.
Yes.
Is what are we listening to now? Because I just thought it'd be a fun thing to add to the podcast and kind of like build a playlist from what me and you are listening to as we're making this podcast. So what are you listening to, Spencer?
Well, I discovered this weird album the Shins put out recently. I don't remember how recently, but a couple years ago, maybe last year, they did an album called Heartworms.
Cool.
So recently I've been discovered this new album by the Shins. It's called The Worm's Heart, and it is a reimagining of an album they put out, I think, last year called Heartworms.
Huh.
The basic idea is that they took every track and like redid it a different way, and they also flipped the lineup. So they took, you know, the what was the first song is now the last song, vice versa, and everything is backwards as far as the track list. So in addition to that, they tried to make like a lot of the slower songs fast and the faster songs slow, and tried to give things different feel. So
very cool.
My favorite song on there, though, is the title track of the first one, Heartworms. And when it was originally like an acoustic song,
yeah,
and they changed it into this like electronic, electronic bass song, and it was pretty cool. Like, it's one of the it's a little hit or miss the album in general, but that song's really solid.
Huh? Yeah, it seems like coming up with a second good version of a song would be a difficult task. For every song on an album.
Exactly. Like, some songs, it works well.
Yeah, I could see, like, sometimes it'd be amazing, and sometimes it'd be, that didn't really work, did it?
There's a couple songs that are better. There's a couple songs that are, like, as good, and then there are definitely some that are, you know, not as good, so.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Well, that makes me want to listen to that entire thing. Like, you have once again, Spencer, done it, and brought me something that is almost like more interesting than it may even be good.
I think that this song, the Heartworms song, is as good as it is interesting, but the album itself may not be.
That's what I mean, I guess. I think it's like, I think that that's one of the flaws in today's world of art creation and promotion, is the more interesting ideas get more press. And so, right, someone who just makes a really good album, it's like, but what's your story? And maybe that's always been the case, but I do feel like there was a time, maybe because there were gatekeepers, and it was less about just wisdom of the crowds, kind of like, right, these days, the crowd pretty much sources everything. It's like, whatever the crowd eventually likes comes to the top, but a lot of times that has more to do with, like, the people they like, which definitely has always been the case, but it's also, you know, I don't know, it's a little different in the olden days where, like, the people making the decisions were more like the record labels and stuff. Maybe there was I like to think there was someone trying to listen to the music and decide what was good at some point, but the more I think about it, it's probably always been that way. And back then instead of people choosing, it was just the labels choosing, and it was still based on image just as much as anything else.
Well, I think it was more image than story. Now there's a, like, is your album also clickbait?
Right.
Like,
yeah, is your album clickbait? Yeah, and I think a lot of albums are clickbait. It's like, if they can get everyone to listen to it once because it's a weird idea, they can make enough on the streaming to make it worth making. And you got to do it these days. You got to have a story. I don't know what my story is. That's kind of a flaw. And I guess that's part of this podcast is like, I mean, I'm doing it too. I'm trying to make there's supplementary content to the album to maybe make it a little more interesting to people who, you know, haven't listened to the full album. Like maybe they'll hear me tell a story and go, hey, now I want to hear that song.
So what's your song of the week or of the month or of the episode, I guess?
So it is an older song. It's about a year old. But it's a John Mayer song. This week, John Mayer, or a couple weeks ago, I guess, John Mayer posted a new video for his song New Light. Have you seen this yet?
Yes. You've told me about it, and I've still not seen it.
Okay, I highly recommend both of the videos I'm going to recommend. New Light is a brand new song, and it's for his new album. And he said in a tweet, and I don't know, I just happened to catch on Twitter. I don't even do Twitter much, but I just happened to catch him saying, the label couldn't agree on a budget for my new video, so I went downtown to a place that does birthdays and bar mitzvahs. And I made my music video. And it's just him on this green screen, like being sort of haphazardly placed into different environments. And sometimes there's multiple of him on the screen. And he obviously didn't do any wardrobe or hair and makeup because his hair and his wardrobe is awful. It's just like, if he did, they deliberately messed him up, you know, messed it up. It's just super fun.
What you're saying is that naturally John Mayer is a horrible dresser.
Yeah, well, I think he's swerving into the fact that he, like, it's obvious he's trying to dress poorly. He's like wearing sweat, like really gnarly looking sweatpants and like a really gnarly shirt. I don't know. It just looks super 80s and funny, and his shirt's dirty and has stains on it. It's just like, it's the antithesis of what you should do to make a music video. Anyway, that song made me kind of do a deep dive and watch more John Mayer videos. I highly recommend that one, but the one that I've been listening to more is a song called Still Feel Like Your Man by John Mayer. And again, it was the video that hooked me. I just watched a bunch of John Mayer videos, and it's from last year, and it's just a super catchy tune, and it's him doing more of a pop thing than he's known for, which is kind of funny, because he's pretty known for poppy, but this is like a little more electronic and really, really fun and really cool, and the video, again, is funny and interesting, and it's got weird dancing pandas in it, and I don't know.
He couldn't spring for the dancing pandas downtown. They just didn't have them.
Yeah. The interesting thing about these two videos, and they're kind of a pair, is that John Mayer's way funnier than I think he gets credit for. And I kind of knew that from some interviews I've heard him in, where I know he's a big fan of comedy, and he even had a comedy show for one episode that never went anywhere on MTV. He did a comedy sketch show that you can find on YouTube. But John Mayer, I don't know, I just like him more than I thought I did. And again, this goes with like the whole image and story more than the music. But those videos made me really like John Mayer more than I have in the past. And I've never been a hater of John Mayer, but I don't know. It Still Feel Like Your Man is just a super great music video. I had to go and like watch all of the other music videos made by that director, which is something I've been doing lately, is making deep dive on music video directors, just because I want to learn how to make better music videos. So I don't know. Still Feel Like Your Man is just a great song. Great listen, but honestly, I would check out the video. It's super good. But yeah, so that's my song, Still Feel Like Your Man by John Mayer. It's really good. It's a weird thing. Both those videos are silly videos for New Light and Still Feel Like Your Man. They're silly, and you watch them, and it makes you laugh, but there's nothing silly in either song. They're like pretty serious love songs or whatever. But it's just like, hey, watch this video. It's so funny. You watch it four times, and then suddenly you're like, oh, I love this song now. videos can really just be vehicles to make you make you listen to the song a few times. That's what I'm trying to like learn about making music videos, is if they'll watch your music video a couple of times, that hook will rest in their brain and they'll go, oh, that hooky song that I like, you know?
I think the video thing is one thing that makes me feel out of touch with popular culture, because I guess it's a time thing. I just never feel like I have time to stop and watch anything. Yeah. You know, occasionally I'll watch a like full-length show, but most of the time I'm just doing audio, so I listen to way more songs, discover way more songs through audio means than visual means.
I think that's more true these days for most people. I think the way the music video genre as a genre of something people just sit around and do is not really a thing anymore. I mean, I do it from time to time, but it's really rare. And I do it more for professional reasons. So I don't know if it's something that I think like, and it's becoming harder and harder to share around music videos on the internet, because all of the places you used to be able to do that are kind of clamping down on how you share things. And, so you just don't even see music videos popping up like on Facebook anymore. I feel like that used to happen a lot, and it doesn't even happen anymore because Facebook has started to make their algorithm in such a way that they deprioritize content that takes you away from Facebook.
Right. Yeah.
So that's actually something I had to learn. Like I posted Heart on Fire on YouTube and it got almost no views. And then I posted on Facebook because that's where most of my community is, and they shared it around, you know, and then it got views on Facebook, even though I'd posted it on Facebook from YouTube. They deprioritize it because it takes people away. So, yeah, kind of a bummer. Because then it's really hard to grow a YouTube audience, which is where you can get noticed by kind of a bigger audience. So Facebook is so insular. It's so hard to break out to new people. Just like get music heard by new people. That is my biggest struggle right now. Is to like try to get new people to listen to music. So if you're listening to this and you like the album, tell a friend. Tell a friend about it, because that's the best thing that'll help me spread the word.
Okay, so we're here tonight to talk about the fourth track on Matt's album.
Yeah.
Which is called You Look Like My Ex-Girlfriend.
You Look Like My Ex-Girlfriend.
Yep.
Sorry,
I should have known that right off the top of my head, but I was like, is it named something slightly different than the chorus, or is it the chorus?
Yeah, okay, it's the chorus. This one went through a few different titles when I was trying to come up with, so you probably saw different versions over the course of the album.
What were the other titles?
Well, just Ex-Girlfriend for a really long time.
Yeah, that's what we called it as shorthand.
Yeah, we just called it Ex-Girlfriend. And then for a while it was You Look Like My Ex-Girlfriend, spelled like a teenager would spell it, because I thought that might be a fun thing to do. But then in the end I just called it, spelled out, You Look Like My Ex-Girlfriend. It was like you, just the letter U, look.
Well, it's more like it's more like I knew you were an old man trying to
spell for a while. That was the name of the song.
Yeah, I think you went with the better option.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a style thing, which definitely us old men like the spelled out version. I don't know. I use that kind of language. I'm a man of the internet. I type with my thumbs, and sometimes I...
Matthew Carroll, man of the internet.
Yeah.
So I used to have this thing about mixtapes, which I used to make a lot of mixtapes for my wife before her CD player in her car broke.
Mm.
And so now there's not really a lot of reason to make them. But, different people have different philosophies on this, and like our friend Nick McCauchy said that his was to make the second song the best.
Mm-hmm.
So you make, you know, an opener and then you do the best song. But for a long time and I've kind of just chunked all this anyway and just try to make every song as good as, you know, on there as good as I can. But my idea was that you go by the baseball rules, where it's like the first few songs are just to get somebody on base.
Right, to set it up.
Yeah, and then like, you know, 4, 5, 6 is kind of where you put your heavy hitters.
Interesting.
Because that's where you can get, you know, all as many runs batted in as possible.
Yeah. It's a weird way to look at it, but yeah. And I think that probably goes for this album a little bit. 4, 5, and 6 are 4, 5, and 6 of my favorites. This one I think is really strong. Like, it's a really strong pop song, and I cannot wait to try to push it as a single. It's funny. I've released 2 videos so far, and they've been kind of the singles, I guess. But part of my strategy of releasing singles was not to do my favorite pop songs first, because I don't have an audience built yet, and so. Mm-hmm. I felt like I should build an audience with some maybe more heartfelt songs that maybe would build, and then hit them with a real good pop song once I kind of get that done. And that's kind of where I am now. I'm ready to try to hit them with a pop song next. I'm excited. This might be the next single, and I really love this song. But it's about true story, this song. have you ever had this experience, Spencer?
Not with an ex-girlfriend, but like with people in general.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I stare to like certain people too long because I'm like, is that a guy I used to work with?
Right. Yeah.
I think he is.
I find myself like having weird affection for people because they look like other people.
Oh yeah, well that's natural too. Like, your brain does that. Like,
yeah. I was even...
Familiarity breeds contempt or something around
contempt?
That.
That's not what I'm saying.
That is the saying, but yeah. No, I'm just messing with you.
This song is about meeting someone who looks like someone you have loved and maybe still have some feelings for, and then you can't get over... You can't look past the fact that they look like the other person so much so that it, like, makes you feel feelings that aren't... That don't belong to them. They're feelings that are very misdirected.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but it's a similar situation, sort of.
Oh, yeah?
So we found out the other day that one of our neighbors died.
Oh, no.
And... that was, you know, she died like a month before we found out, and that was weird because we were like, she lived next door. It seemed like we should have found out earlier, but then we realized, through talking to another neighbor that wasn't the woman we thought she was. And actually her twin sister had lived there before her and died. And then her sister moved in. And that was the one that had just died.
So you had 2 neighbors that looked the same die, and you didn't know about either one of them.
Yes, and we didn't know that the changeover happened.
You didn't know that the changeover happened.
No, yeah, when the changeover happened, like, and it took us a while to figure out when the changeover happened.
Wow, you are a horrible neighbor.
That we had no idea. Well, part of it is that I'm going to stake by this was a horrible twin, because it seems that you should, when you go up to a neighbor who you know knew your sister, you should say, hey, I'm, you know, so-and-so's twin sister. But no, they look exactly alike, had the same haircut, had glasses, seemed to dress the same. I mean, they were looked almost identical.
Well, I think that's genius.
Hence the twins. And and did not announce.
She just slid right into the lady's life.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of amazing. I wonder who else she fooled.
She looked like my ex-neighbor is what she looked like.
You look like my ex-neighbor. Doesn't have the same ring, I don't think.
No. And it also has a little bit of a bummer song, too. So.
Yeah. This song is very much... When I had that experience that night, I wrote that line in my phone. I wrote, "You look like my ex-girlfriend," in my phone as a hook. And I think I even had the melody in my head. This song is one that kind of had a weird... A lot of times my songs grow in stages. I'll have a general idea, or even I just won't have an idea at all before I write. I sit down, I just write the song. And it comes out It comes out however it comes out. But this one, I had a very clear idea of what I wanted from it from the time I had the experience. Like, I wrote that, I wrote that hook that night, and I recorded it on my phone and wrote the lyrics down a little bit. And then months and months later, when I finally had a chance to sit down and do some writing, I finally, like, fleshed out the whole tune. And that was kind of a rare occurrence for me to have a hook and have a beginning to a song so clearly defined in my head before that far ahead of time. And so, I don't know, it's just interesting. Even down to something that I never do, I never write, like, hooks for guitars. But this song, at the end of the chorus, there's a wow wow ba da 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 da. There's that hook. Like, I sang that on the original demo when I wrote this song. So it's like another thing that was, like, forward looking about this song. When I wrote the song, I never write guitar hooks. I normally leave that for the guitar players. But I wrote that guitar hook and had it on the demo, the original demo to this song. And I always liked the concept of this song, but I once I finished it and once I did the demo and started having guitar players over and bass players over and, like, they started working on it from a production perspective, I just hated it. I hated the song.
And I, you couldn't get the, if I recall right, the guitar never hit right for you.
Yeah, it never, something was missing. It just, like, it felt bland. Like, the song just felt like cookie cutter bland pop song and didn't have something interesting about it musically, I guess. And maybe it was because I had written it so much like I wanted it to end up, and then it just stayed that way. And maybe it's just that I got used to it. But then finally, after we did this song went through more. This song was the second most versions of any song on the album. The first was Pilots and Sailors. That one took so many versions to get right, get the voice and, like, the way we would record it right. But this one was second to that. And I just kept, it was mostly the guitar. The bass was pretty stable. The drums were pretty stable. But I had guitarist after guitarist in, and we just kept trying different things and could not land on a, like, final, on something I liked. And then
it was also kind of late in the process that you got something you liked, if I remember.
Yeah,
right.
No, I almost cut this song. Like, it was like the day before we recorded it in the studio, or maybe 2 days before. I went out to Alan Stone, who played guitar on this song. We played lead guitar on this song. I went out to the studio with him, and I said, "Alan, we got to figure out the song." And so we played with it. We tried different things. And then finally what we landed on, the thing that pushed this song over the edge to where I actually loved it, was I was like, here's what you're going to do. You're going to play a version of this song and get as obnoxious as you possibly can with the guitar. I told him, like, play, like, shreddy metal guitar over this pop song. Just, like, especially in the bridge. I had this little bridge, and I was like, I sing these lines that are like, "I lock these feelings away." And then I told him, just wail on the guitar. Just really go after it. Like, really, and I think I even sung some, like, kind of, like just, like, really go, like, Van Halen on those parts, you know?
Yeah, I really do like the way the guitar turned out on this song.
I love
song.
It. And once we did that, and we were still in the demo phase, we were about to go into we had already been rehearsing all the other songs, and this song, I was, like, moments from just tossing it and making an 11-track album. And then that final night, a couple nights before actually recording, we went into the studio, and I was just like, be obnoxious. Like, push it to the point of, like, it's almost silly that you're doing what you're doing. Like, be as flashy as you can. Because a lot of times these days, that's kind of looked down upon.
Well, it definitely was, like 10 years ago or something like that.
For sure.
The indie, the first wave of indie that I listened to, it was like, yeah, no solo, no brash guitar.
Well, and I don't even think it's an indie thing. I think it's an indie, it's a pop thing. Like, it's music does not have guitar solos anymore. Honestly, they don't have instrumental solos anymore. And this one doesn't actually have an instrumental solo either. Very few. I won't say none, obviously. I just talked about John Mayer. His stuff still does. But it's very rare for a pop song to have a guitar solo in it. And I just wanted, and to have these sort of shreddy, crazy guitar parts, it brought the song together in a way that nothing else did. And I'm really excited about how it ended up.
Well, and I don't think that you actually, wanted it to end up sounding obnoxious, because no. I think it just fits the song well.
Yeah, now. Exactly. But exactly, because we were trying all kinds of things, and we were trying all kinds of really neat voicings of chords and stuff, and really neat lead parts that had melody to them. And then finally, I was like, no, that's not what this song needs. It needs like a Van Halen guitar solo in the background, and he does that in between the bridge. But once the bridge is over, he just never stops. He goes full on out. For the rest of there's like a double chorus at the end where he's just wailing on the guitar, and I think it makes the song. And those little that hook that happens multiple times after each chorus becomes almost like a, it's almost like a, not a spoiler, what's the word I'm looking for? A foreshadowing of like the guitar's eventually going to do something interesting. it's like just a little bit of interesting wailing on the guitar after each chorus, and then the bridge, it just takes off and never stops. And I love how it ended up. And Alan Stone brought the song together, honestly. It was great. Alan Stone's awesome. Great guitar player.
Thank you, Alan Stone.
Thank you, Alan Stone. Not the Alan Stone who is actually a pop star. There's an Alan Stone who's a pop singer-songwriter guy. And
I'm sorry, Alan, you're not the famous Alan Stone.
No, he's not the famous one. He has been on tour with some famous people, but he's not famous just yet. But I think he will be, because he's killer. Maybe he'll get famous for this track. Do you have anything else you want to say about You Look Like Mac's Girlfriend, Spencer? Or ask her.
I will say, I remember at some point in the... Matt had, and I think we've mentioned this, but Matt had a lot of trouble narrowing down his songs to, I can't remember how many there was, like, good, you know, like, I think what you say elsewhere is, like, that there were 200 songs
about 200.
There was, like, 25 that you, like, really want, like, liked, were 25 that were, like, strong contenders.
There were 30 on the list of contenders, like, once, so it started with 200. I looked at those 200 and found 60 I really liked. Then I narrowed it down to 30 that were like serious contenders. And it was this whole process of willowing down. And then those 30, I started demoing. I think I actually demoed about 22 or 23 of them. I didn't actually fit, because some of those others that I thought I might demo, I just ended up deciding against. A lot of the decision making, we've talked about this, I believe, on the cast, but a lot of the decision making.
Yeah, I don't want to retread too much.
No, yeah. But a lot of the decision making ended up being about how we would, like, how this album would come together as a cohesive album. And so there are certain songs that got thrown out, not because I didn't love them, but because they just didn't fit what I was the album I was trying to make. And so.
But there was a point where Matt sent around like a list of like five or six and said, I have to only pick three. And this was after the first five.
Oh, yeah.
Or so
this was like
recorded.
The last three songs I needed to add to the album. And I was like, here's the five contenders. Which three of these are going to be it?
I don't know how many people he sent it to, but I know that this was a track I actually did not vote for.
Yeah. I didn't either,
but I did enjoy how it turned out. Like there, I think it was there's a, other than me, maybe other than me and you, everybody else had it on the list.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think a lot of people put it on their list, and I think it's such a strong pop song, like at its core, just the strength of the hook and the concept of the song, they carry it so well. That so many people liked it. That's what sent me into the studio with Alan Stone. I was like, we have got to solve this song. We've got to figure out why it's not working. Because other people say they like it, but I am bored by it. And I mean, it needs something. And I think part of it is just the chorus is kind of long. And so with a song with a long chorus, you do that chorus four times. It feels, the song feels long. And I think it is. I think it's like 4 minutes long. I'm not sure. I'm guessing. But it's one of the longer songs on the album. And, you know, the classic 3-minute pop song, it is not. You can cut off that last chorus and it probably would work. But it's, you know, once we did that studio session, it finally just, it came together for me, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I really hope you guys like it. This song you're about to hear is You Look Like My Ex-Girlfriend. If you are enjoying this podcast and you haven't liked me on Facebook or Twitter or join the email list or whatever, you can go to MatthewCarrollMusic.com and sign up on the email list. There's links to the Facebook, there's links to the Twitter, Instagram, whatever you like. And if I'm not on whatever service you like, let me know. I'll try to join it. we're posting a lot of cool videos and stuff lately. Really excited to try to share this music with everybody. And thanks for listening to the cast, guys.
I was gonna say, you know, listen to it once, just straight through. But then the second time, just listen to the guitar.
Yeah, the guitar. Especially the bridge on the guitar is just super fun. That's Alan Stone. He's the best. Check it out. All right, guys, this is You Look Like My Ex-Girlfriend. A friend of mine brought you to my show. She didn't know. That was all before her time. As soon as you walk in the place, I recognize that face, that hair, that body. Oh, I'd seen it before. But you're not her. No, you're not her. For a ghost. Yeah, I'm laughing too hard at your jokes. I'm leaning your direction. But these feelings, they're not for you. They're just my issues unresolved. I promise you don't wanna get involved. You look like my ex-girlfriend. You got me feeling a bit nostalgic. You should probably run from me, cause I got bad intentions.